Well, good evening.
Good evening.
This is our sort of launching of the precepts for floating Zendo, another time. Fresh and new. Just as you would like. I thought I would mention those things that have been published about it. I brought two of them, and I think what I'll do is focus, if I have to, on this one, which is Dido Lurie's book called The Heart of Being. And it's as close to our tradition as anything I know, even though it's still more formal than we are used to doing. So, and this is even more formal. This is Reb Anderson's very interesting book called Being Upright that is very helpful on addressing the precepts. Thich Nhat Hanh has a book that I must have given away, and so has Aiken Roshi. So you might find those in the bookstore down the street. They're probably still in print. The Mind of Clover is Aiken Roshi's book, and I can't remember Thich Nhat Hanh. He was just starting to be intense about the precepts, I could say. When I, many years ago, was in Plum Village in France, and he had pulled up all the vines of a really beautiful vineyard that had been there for hundreds of years and was especially precious for everybody in the neighborhood. They couldn't believe that he pulled up all the vines and planted plum trees instead. So it's called Plum Village because it's an orchard now, a plum orchard, miles of it. He did that because he was so horrified when he came to the West by the way that people came to him with their problems, and so many of their problems had to do with alcohol. And he thought it was, and not just alcohol, but many, all the other things that we take for granted just about, that are so unconscious of the precepts. So he started out with a very simple little list like I'm going to show you. And then it got a little more complicated and a little more complicated. And by the time I got there, each paragraph was a long paragraph outlining exactly how it should be. And now it's much more than that. It's a whole book. He came from a beautiful little country village in Vietnam and was so devastated by the war and tried to help it stop. He tried to persuade both sides to stop. So when he came to the UN to ask everyone to stop this whole thing, nobody would let him come and stay in their country. We wouldn't let him. That's why he ended up in France. So to this day, he's extremely sensitive to the question of ethical standards, you could say, in the most simple way. How is that we harm each other when we're not conscious of what we're doing? That's the whole point, really, of the precepts. On Saturday, I gave a talk We had a very nice one day sit. It was a very nice combination of new people and real old timers. Eric came down with Nico, and John was here. Marie and Ellie were here, so we had a lovely mix of old and new. And my subject was Zazen as the source of the precepts. So it's important to be clear that they're not coming from someplace else. They're coming from you. They're coming from me and you. And they're not imprecations. They don't posit punishment if you don't do it right. It isn't about right and wrong. As we said last week, if you pull one side up, the other side naturally comes too. It's how we choose. How we see first, with what kind of clarity we see what's happening. What's happening in our mind, what's happening in our world, our present world around us. And then how we choose to comport ourselves in relation to ourself, our mind, our body, and we could call the all of it, the all of us. So much of how we live is unconscious, and we know that, and we can't be totally conscious every single moment of the day, or we would stumble and fall, because you can't be conscious of what's out there and what's in here and what's under our feet all at the same time. We stumble over a rock, and that doesn't work. Mindfulness does not mean being vividly aware of every single breath and moment as it's passing, or as it's passing in us and through us. It's more about just trying to stay awake. Just being awake. It's not a fancy thing. It's just a very, very simple one. So I'll pass these out. This is our version. This is Coben's version, actually. So every different little Zen place like this has a little different version of this. There's a book that Gil Fronsdale edited, assembled, of all the different versions that have come out of trying to translate the untranslatable of all of this. And it's very interesting. I'll bring it in sometime during this conversation because I think it's so interesting. And Coben is in there, his version, and every time I think, oh yeah, but that's the best one. Mm-hmm. his pure precepts are much more poetic than the ones that usually are pronounced as good and evil. And the prohibitory precepts are also very simple. He explained that in the original, you don't say, "I vow not to kill." There's no "I" in there. It's vowing not to kill. And again, it's that Zazen mind of the presence of the vow of not to kill, which is always with us. And this is reminding us, oh, there's this in me. Of course, as the worm comes out of the muddy ground or something. And although we haven't usually done the positive side of it, I like that a lot. And I think it's helpful to offer the positive side as well as the prohibitory side. Wish that, because that too is arising in us and is why we don't kill. We have an affirmation in us to live and for all things to live. What I want to propose is that we start at the bottom and proceed to the top after we finish the 10. I think we need to take each one of them home one by one and practice them. It's just the very best way of understanding what these are. In my own life, it just startles me every time that I take these in turn in this way and really look at how I'm eating and what I'm eating and where I put my feet and how I react to what's going on in the world. We are living in a very dramatic time, and we are having many dramatic reactions, I think, most of us, to what we hear. So this will be helpful in just bringing us back into recognizing how it's working in us and how it can work in us. It gives us the choice. It gives us an opportunity for clarity. I think that's all I have to say about the precepts right now. But I think you might have questions.
Why are the three treasures written this way in Koban's version? Twice, and then is it just a chant?
It's not a chant. It's taking refuge. So it's taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha.
So he does that three times.
You do it three times.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the culmination of preparing for taking the precepts. You really can't take the precepts until you do the clarification at all my ancient wrong actions you know, oh, here I am. I have to recognize that I'm never going to be a perfect person. And I never was. and then we take refuge in Buddha and Dharma and Sangha. And with that kind of backward gesture, backward step of going inside, then we're prepared to embrace and sustain right conduct and every good, and vow to notice what it is that this life is and what it wants. Yeah. Yeah.
So this sheet strikes me as encouraging and being helpful as almost a document to memorize. It's a it's very short.
Yes.
And I know the books that you have, you're bringing in to talk about, we're going to flush out all this much larger content. Because just as with the Platform Sutra, we were connecting with an ancestor, this goes way, way back.
Yes.
Because my understanding is that these precepts came out of, because the Buddha was going to die, he looked at how he was, how the Sangha was going to go on. And they mm-hmm. needed something so that they could talk about.
Yes.
Problems and stuff like that, and these precepts sort of set it out. So it's that. I mean, this really goes way, way, way back. You're really connecting with the ancestors in this. So often, I find that's what we're doing. We're making
yes.
this big leap in time, going way back. But this is really easy to embrace in terms of memorization.
Anybody can memorize this.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeffrey. That's an important point. The way these were even invented, I mean, where they came from, is the practice of the Sangha around Buddha. And by the time he was dying, there were so many of them that the disciples said, well, which one shall we keep? And he said, well, it's up to you. And they couldn't decide. So they just kept all of them. So there are hundreds of them. You should read those sometime, maybe. They're very strange, some of them. It just depended on what happened during the day. Something happened that people were upset by. It's not just Joe taking somebody's razor. It's more like Joe taking somebody's wife, or even more radical things than that. So each time, Buddha said, okay, we'll remember this, and we'll add this to our list. So you can read this list still to this day. But
I had another comment. It's about the three pure precepts. And embracing and sustaining right conduct. Most of what I've ever, it's usually, it's worded a little bit differently.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of to not do harm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was just interested in most of the ones I read, that's what it says. This one's really kind of points in a different direction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment and then a question. I know there are millions of many versions of the clarification in the vowel, but the one version I learned was the last line was, now I tell all the first three lines are the same, but now I fully avow, now I atone for it all.
Yes.
Avow.
Yes, Copen talked about that. He thought atonement was the wrong thing, that it was not, we're not atoning for anything. We can't really atone for our own natural nature.
What does atone mean?
Atone means, how would you say, that you want to pay for it in some way, all your mistakes and all your badness.
Right.
That there's some way to pay for it.
Is it sort of like making amends?
It's sort of like, yeah.
But so fully avow, I mean, I understand that. That's actually really helpful to know that it's not that we can ever make it all right.
Yes.
Make a clean breast or something. But what I should go look this up, but I don't really understand avow, the word avow. It's kind of an archaic. It's not used a whole lot, I don't think.
We can say admit.
Okay, but avow means...
I admit it. I accept this whole thing.
Okay. All right. I see. All right.
All together. I admit and accept the whole package, however it is.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think Reb Anderson kind of puts emphasis on making like a confession.
Yes. Yes.
I picked up that book a while ago and I just loved it right away because it felt so like instructions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You must do this and this and this, right?
Yeah.
That's another way. There are many, many different ways of being with this. And we don't know directly how Buddha would want us to do it. It's all up to each one of us. And each one of us, like our Zazen itself, is our own. We don't even know what each other's Zazen is, much less our ethical standards or any of those things. Each one of us is living from the center of ourself, and each life of us is an expression of the whole thing, really. So it's all different. And it's an opportunity to appreciate and really be interested in how it is with others. Not just for ourselves, because it's really about everybody. And I think in human life, we have needed so much to be aware of this side of things. You know, there's meditation and there's wisdom, the other two pieces of practice as it's defined in Zen. But without these, it's a dead thing. This is where the life of it is. This is how we meet in the middle of this.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the 10 prohibitory precepts, and I'm going wrong already at the first line, because I think about the place where I'm from is a small town that is historically very much revolves around the killing of animals, because, you know, that's what people do for a living. It's very agricultural and all of that, and so that kind of poses an ethical dilemma.
Well, that's not what these are.
Okay.
This isn't saying, I vow never to kill.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying, I notice killing.
Right.
And I will decide for myself how to make things the best and most wholesome way around this subject.
Right.
Which can mean I will never eat a chicken again because they're cutting off heads all over the place, and mm-hmm. I don't agree with that.
Right.
Or you can eat the chicken and be grateful.
Right.
And try to make things the best way in your way.
Yeah.
So it's not you break. We'll break every single one of these precepts every day. Every single day. So it's not about that.
Yeah.
Jeffrey?
I remember my first Zen teacher looked at that and was talking about do not kill your Buddha nature. Do not kill your Buddha nature. Don't turn away from the Buddha. That's
nice.
Killing the life is like also killing the spirit.
Absolutely. Yes.
Mm. Yes. If you affirm life, you're affirming your spiritual life. That you know, so it also means that.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. Yeah. Paul, did you have something?
I was just going to say that I eat the chicken, but I don't waste it. I don't throw any of it out. I can help it. You know.
Yep. Yeah. I know somebody who eats out of the dumpster. Steve?
I'm a little bit hung up on the word ancient. Is that, are you saying that this refers to our actual wrongs in life, or are they sort of referring to previous lives or before I was born? Sort of like in the Christian, where they say original sin, or is this things that I've actually done?
All of the above. In one sense, of course, you just got born, and you're here for this length of time. But life itself is very, very ancient. It's even farther back. Every time I read science news, it seems to be having gone farther back than we ever knew. So, and even farther back than that. So, there are both senses of it. The very form side, you could say, and then the emptiness side, which is everything that goes as far back as you can even imagine, and then farther back than that, of which we are a part. And this is a recognition of that.
In the language of, in somebody's language, when they talk about these conditionings that we learned from our parents,
mm-hmm.
that's a tie to the ancient. I know I have a tie to my grandpa, who was not always a gentle person.
Yes.
through my dad, and I'm sure his grandpa wasn't. You know, that's maybe our tie to the ancient wrong actions.
Absolutely. When Buddha was sitting under the tree, one of the his experiences was to see his life and his parents' life and their life and their life, and he realized that it went all the way back more than he could even imagine. And then the animals and the bugs and the plants and everything. The more he thought about it, the more he realized that everything had brought him to this place. And that's true for all of us. Everything. Yeah. So now what?
I don't know if you said it on Saturday, was it Saturday that you were talking about mistakes?
Yes.
That if you missed it, that was, that really stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Made me, you know, hopeful, I guess, that the Zazen and these would help me make less mistakes. Because that's the way you put it. I really like
that.
I don't know if I can articulate it as well as you did, but.
Yeah, we just miss sometimes.
Yeah.
We just stumble
just
and miss.
Wake of mistakes every time we're walking out of a space.
Yeah, it's not about being perfect. It's about fulfilling our life in the best way we can. And that's a very complex and interesting exercise. We'll never really get to the bottom of, but we make lots of mistakes, mistaking one thing after another.
Roshi Ford refers to his life as one continuous mistake.
Oh, yes, that's a famous saying.
I wrote a poem about that.
Oh?
That and the crooked belly button.
The what?
Well, yes, we all have crooked belly buttons, and we're trying to straighten them out, and we're listing this way and listing that way, and we're always trying to find that
lining up the nose.
Yeah. So between the continuous mistake and the crooked belly button,
it's perfect.
We Zen students.
We're perfect Zen students. Well, I think Zen students tend to be very much wanting to do the right thing and be the right thing. That already that this sense of rightness and wrongness hasn't come up in us in the same way as it does in the black and white kind of way, that it's a sense of how life is going and where we fit in it. What is our place, and how can we exercise our life and express it in this place where we find ourselves? So already we're very sensitive to this, even though it's not in such clear terms, but that we come to sit because we know there's something going on and we need to connect with it and be that connection. And that we have this is tremendous. This is really the essence of our practice. If there's anything that happens, we do the precepts again. We do it 4 times a month if you're in a monastery, every phase of the moon. And you do it at weddings. You do it at funerals. If the person who died was a Buddhist but hadn't taken the precepts, you give them the precepts. And you give them a name. And you give them a lineage chart, the whole thing. So that it's done. It's all tied up in that way. So and if you do the first ceremony about it, if you sew a raksu, then you take the precepts. You are given the precepts and you accept them. But that's just one of the many ceremonies. And every single time you do one of them, you do the precepts again. And it's just brand new every single time. It's, even though it's a very, very simple ceremony, it's very powerful too. But not required. I want to be sure that, you know, there's no requirement. It's not like that. Well, it's 8:00. So let's do no killing life. Let's be no killing life and see. And if you find yourself in some kind of state, I don't know if I told you, but I was in a group of Zen teachers, and one of them, after our president was elected, said she hoped somebody would kill him. My God. But you'll find these things passing into your mind. They're all with us. They're all in us. We're violent animals and stupid animals in a lot of ways and very impulsive. So if you find yourself being stupid and impulsive, bow to it. That's your animal nature. And at your opportunity, you're noticing it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is the truth of it. Better take care of it. Better kind of watch out. So we'll talk some more next week about no killing. And if you could bring your experiences with you, then we can discuss.
We should make an announcement about the business meeting. I don't think that went out.
Which day was chosen for it?
I think it was April 11th. I'm just making sure that that's I think that's a Tuesday. April 11th. So it's in just a couple weeks. So I'm going to get here tonight. Sorry. April 11th is
going to
be the next meeting. Okay. After, I'll send out a note.
Okay.
Maybe
good.
Maybe after the meeting.
And you're looking for new people.
Looking
in
for new
position.
People, right? For email. And I'll talk to people about Dewan tonight afterwards.
Okay. One minute, sit.